Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody's having a terrific Thursday today. Have some couple different topics to talk about, definitely some wild ones. And how are you doing today, Dad, up in Georgia?
Austin, I'm doing great. I'm in the RV. I'm over here at the Hiawassee Fairgrounds, and it's right by a lake up here, some big dam-controlled lake, I think, up from the Chattooga River, or one of the probably a bunch of rivers. And last night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard a big thump on top of the motorhome. And so I'm thinking somebody's climbing up on top of the motorhome, right? I'm thinking, how'd they get up there? I mean, there's no ladder on the back. And so finally, I hear a bump, bump, bump. Somebody's walking on the motorhome. And I had some big old Canadian goose, it sounded like about a 30-pounder, walking around on top of the coach in the middle of the night. And, of course, then he starts squawking and yelling. And I think to myself, this is just exciting. I feel like I'm out in the wilderness. So it was interesting. Let me tell you that. I guarantee it was not for the faint of heart at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, and the problem with that too is it bumps your adrenaline, your cortisol up. So then you got to try and go back to bed after you find out it's just a goose.
Well, I gave up at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock, I got up and said, "Well, I'm done with this. I'm just gonna just get on up." So I've been up for quite a while already, but it's okay. I'm ready to go on the show. And I was on with Man Cow this morning. I did a show in Chicago this morning with Man Cow. And I love doing a show, but boy, I tell you what, that's a wild show. It's a secular show. And so, pretty much every topic is okay to talk about. So it was kind of crazy. And then I also was on with Lou in the Morning in Pensacola this morning, which Lou's a good friend of mine. And so I'm on his show about every 2 weeks. And these are other shows that we do in addition to what we do on the show with you. And so it's exciting. I enjoy doing what I do. I've been doing it for so long that I finally feel pretty comfortable doing radio and TV. So I guess it's a good thing, isn't it, Austin?
Yeah, it is. Well, the first thing I wanted to address today is the federal government, the Health Resources and Services Administration, released the financial settlement figures for vaccine injuries for the first fiscal part of 2017. This is pretty shocking. Now, the document revealed that 633 petitions for serious vaccine injury or death have been filed in fiscal year 2017. Now, remember, guys, the number of petitions filed is a tiny, tiny fraction of the total number of children who are actually harmed by vaccines. Doctors always try to aggressively brainwash the parents into believing that the seizures, autism, convulsions are all some random incident that happened and has nothing to do with the vaccine. Also, too, the families of vaccine-injured children have to hire an attorney at their own expense and file a petition with the U.S. government and then wait anywhere from 2 to 10 years for a decision. So nearly all the cases of vaccine injury, parents are convinced either believing the vaccines had nothing to do with it or trying to fight the government for compensation is a complete waste of time. The real numbers that we've basically heard and read and talked about from real parents and everything is at least about 100 times higher, and I think that's on the low side personally, which means we're looking at probably around 6,300 more than likely vaccine injured children that would actually be on the map right now filing petitions.
I think that number is 63,000. You say 630?
Well, 633 is actually the amount that have filed true petitions right now with the federal government. When you look at the numbers as far as what we actually have, it's between 100 to 1,000 more than that as far as time.
I think that would be 63,000 petitions, because, I mean, that would be better in the numbers, but just so far in the last year or so with that. And let me give you a statistic, because I had to do this for the Man Cow show this morning. They asked me to prepare for this. And this is from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention. You guys can look this up on your own. It's from the head thing from the CDC asking questions about HPV vaccine safety. And of course, you know, they're telling everybody how safe it is, but this is crazy. This is what they're actually saying. They're saying that the actual number of people that have reported adverse reactions to the HPV vaccine in the United States, right, is 33,945. That's just one vaccine, Austin. So that's why, wow. That's why I'm saying over the 60,000 be correct. And then they're saying that the most frequent reported symptoms are including fainting, dizziness, headache, nausea, fever, pain, and redness and swelling in the arm. Of the other reports, vaxxers considered 7% were classified as serious, and about 14% were not related to were related to health problems, but reported for other reasons. But what's interesting about this is, if you go on and you read here, it talks about Guillain-Barre, it talks about Tourette's, it talks about has anyone ever died after getting the vaccine dosage? Now here's what it says. Yes, some deaths among people who receive HPV vaccine has been reported. However, I mean, they take the vaccine and they die almost immediately. This does not mean that the vaccine caused the death. Well, whatever caused the death other than the vaccine? Only that death occurred after the person got the vaccine and the FDA reviewed all available information. See, what they're doing is they're doing a huge blame shifting here after people die, saying, oh, it can't be the vaccine. No problems with this whatsoever. And then it goes on. So is it okay for pregnant women? It goes, well, you shouldn't really take it if you're pregnant, but if you have, don't worry about it. No problem if you're nursing a baby. All of this stuff, they're saying it's okay. Guys, they just admitted that people on the CDC website have died, and over 30,000 people have reported adverse reactions to just one simple vaccine. So go. I'm sorry, Austin, to interrupt you like that. Go ahead and finish your story about that.
No, that was incredible. But I mean, just to show you as far as how this is going, as far as the way everything is with the amounts that are actually happening, the Department of Health and Resources and Service Administration released the running tally of the compensations paid out for 2017 so far. Currently, right now, it stands as they have paid out $142 million just in the first half of the fiscal year 2017. That only covers the 377 cases that were successful in obtaining compensation in the fiscal year of 2017. $142 million of taxpayer money has had to be paid out to families because they were significantly injured or killed by vaccines just in the last 6 months. Does anybody else think that's an issue here? $142 million? And could you imagine if these families could actually file suit on Merck, on all these companies, on, you know, GlaxoSmithKline, the companies that are producing these vaccines, and these companies actually had to defend themselves and prove in court that this vaccine didn't cause that? It would be astronomical, the payouts of what they would be. So this is an issue. I'm glad you brought that up as far as you have your numbers, Dad, because this is what I keep trying to tell everybody. Do your research. Don't listen to the propaganda-spewing doctors that tell you vaccines are 100% safe. There's nothing wrong with them. You need to give your kid every shot that's ever been manufactured because it's there for their protection. Because here, right here, this completely and totally nullifies what they say about all this. Aurora Hills, California, close to one quarter of the students at a California elementary school have been directed by school officials to stay home for 3 weeks due to an onset of chickenpox cases that began in March this year. The chickenpox outbreak is unique because the first case of chickenpox discovered at a school that was found to students who were not fully vaccinated. Danielle Stempowski, the superintendent, said, a kindergartner, a first grader, and a third grader all happened in mid-March. The students were immunized. However, they still contracted chickenpox. This is him. I'm quoting him. He also noted that it's interesting. The first of these three cases was a student that was fully immunized. They were vaccinated. After two more cases were found, the school district took action to keep any unvaccinated students out of the school for 3 weeks. Apparently in California, you can still get legitimate medical waivers for vaccinations. They're still allowing them. The allowance of personal and religious exemptions for vaccines are not currently allowed. But I found that wild, Dad, that they sit there and say, you got to get the chickenpox vaccine. You need the measles vaccine. You need this vaccine. And the kids that started the chickenpox outbreak at this school were fully vaccinated and had the chickenpox vaccines, yet they still got it and they still spread it. So that just goes to prove my point right there. That everybody goes, well, I got to vaccinate my kids. I don't want them to contract this. I got to shoot them up with all these shots that the CDC recommends and my pediatrician recommends. No, you don't. You have a right to make your own choice and do your own research and make the best decision for your family and kids, guys.
Well, that's until Mr. Gottlieb gets into the FDA and he starts running this thing like a doggone Gestapo agency. I mean, you got to realize something, guys. You know, immunizations are not necessarily acquired by a vaccination. That's something that confuses people. And I mentioned this the other day on the air, and Sharon said, you know, you need to try to qualify what that means. Just because you get vaccinated with a drug or a chemical or an adjuvant or whatever they give you, and you've got some antigen in your body from that particular disease, it doesn't necessarily make your immune system strong enough to handle that disease, so you never get that disease. You know, in other words, the immune system is what makes you immunized. The vaccine does not. So it's very important that we see the difference. And here we saw this with all these kids with chickenpox. They've had the chickenpox vaccine, but their immune systems still weren't immunized against it. Now, once you have the chickenpox one time, you don't have to worry about ever getting chickenpox again or the measles. So the chickenpox has been linked repeatedly to shingles, the vaccine. So this is a major, major problem that people are having now, getting shingles. And like I mentioned the other day on the show, as an adult, if you get an adult shingles vaccine and you come down with the shingles, you have every right to sue the manufacturer. To change topics here, Mexico City in Mexico, the second deadliest country in 2016. You know, I'm going to say this very clearly so I can say it so everybody gets it. I don't blame the Mexicans for wanting to leave Mexico. I really don't. If I lived in a hellhole down there that was people getting shot and killed everywhere, I wouldn't want to live there either. I'd try to make that border crossing too. We need to have it so that we can have better immigration into this country and have more restrictions on the immigration rather than just having a free flow across the Mexican border. Mexico right now is pretty much in a civil war with the drug cartels. Let me give you some numbers here. This is crazy. In Syria last year, the number of fatalities that were recorded, 50,000. That's a lot of people. That's as many people that died, soldiers that are died in the Vietnam War. This is almost all civilians. In Mexico last year, 23,000 people were murdered because of this war going on with the drug cartels. In Iraq, 17,000 died. In Afghanistan, 16,000 died. In Yemen, where there's a full-blown war going on, 7,000 people died from the numbers that we're getting. But in Mexico, 23,000 people died. And I'll never forget this. I remember when Fox was president of Mexico and they were asking him, how in the world can you share the border with the United States? And you guys have the same natural resources. You've got oil. You've got all the copper, the coal, the whole bit down there in Mexico too. And yet Mexico is such a third world country and the United States is so prosperous. And he was very succinct. He answered it very clearly. He said, when the people and the pilgrims came to the United States to settle the United States, they came looking for God, because they want to have freedom of worship. When the conquistadors and the Spanish came and they conquered and settled South America, they came looking for gold. Complete and total different mindset. We brought Yahweh and Yeshua with us when we came to the country. All they were doing was trying to fulfill their greed glands, Austin. So now we have Mexico as the second deadliest place to live on the planet, even with all these other wars raging. What do you think about that?
That's, wow. Yeah, that's definitely significant. I mean, that's what's so wild to me is how the liberals want to sit there and act like, oh yeah, we need to keep letting people into this country. And I talked about yesterday with Hungary, what they did with the massive Muslim migration and how they stopped it. It's not normal just to let people illegally come into your country, wreak havoc here, bring in crime, start gangs, sell drugs, sell machine guns, and you're supposed to be okay with it. That's not normal behavior. The thing about it is, California is siding so far now, and I hate picking on California because I really do love the state. I love a lot of the stuff they have out there. I love the scenery. I've gone out there and ridden dirt bikes before back when I used to race. It's awesome. The weather's fantastic, but the country is going down so fast. It's almost a joke. The Los Angeles Unified School Board, the LA Unified School Board, just passed a resolution yesterday declaring all schools sanctuary schools for any illegal alien students and their families, including criminal aliens who are facing deportation. This was proposed by the board members and comes shortly after the arrest of Romualdo Gonzalez, who's an illegal alien and detained and arrested by U.S. Customs, apparently in front of his daughter on February 28th. Now, this guy had a DUI conviction in 2009, was arrested went to jail, had an outstanding order for removal, which is a deportation order, since 2014. They couldn't find him. They finally got where he was at. They made sure it was him. They confirmed it was him. They pulled him over after he dropped his daughter off at school. They made sure she wasn't in the vehicle. They arrested him, and they detained him and deported him. And so it was a huge debacle out there in California, so much that these blithering idiots on the Los Angeles school board said, we're making every school a sanctuary school. Not only does the resolution designate all Los Angeles school campuses a safe place for illegals and their families, it goes on to say, and I quote, this is what it says in the measure, schools cannot ask about a student's or family member's immigration status. The district will partner with legal service organizations to create Know Your Right presentations for students and families to educate them in interacting with immigration agents. District employees can refuse to the fullest extent to share information with immigration agents. The district will help with legal support for immigrant students and their families by offering referrals to reputable legal organizations. The district will create a rapid response network to help students or families who have been detained by immigrant officials. This has gotten so far out of hand in California to the point now they're spending resources, they're spending manpower, and they're going off and making sure they encourage these guys not to speak to law enforcement. They're telling their staff at the schools, you do not have the right to share any of the personal information with law enforcement or immigration status. You have to completely deny anything that you know about them. You cannot ask the family or the students at all about it. And we wonder why this is starting to become such a problem here in the southern states, especially the Southwest. This is what's happening. You have idiots that are running boards like this in California. They're intentionally going out of their way, spending taxpayer dollars, time, and energy to go in and block the federal government from detaining people. And a lot of these guys, like the guy they arrested, made this big debacle. He got a DUI in 2009. He had an order for removal in 2014. He was here illegally, but yet they still want to blame law enforcement and immigration and say, well, it's their fault. They did that. They shouldn't have done that. What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to let every single person that wants to come here illegally enter this country, get welfare, get a Social Security card, get a driver's license, get every single free funding you can get from the federal government and stay here for the rest of their lives and have a dozen kids per family? Are we really supposed to be okay with that? I don't think so. I don't think any American that pays taxes and lives here legally should have to deal with that. And if we're not about it, we shouldn't have to accept it, Dad. So, yeah. Mexico's in a rough position right now. We see why they're migrating up here, but that doesn't have to become our problem as well.
No, I feel bad for them. And the problem is, you're right, Austin. We can't take the entire population to the planet into the United States. I mean,
no.
I remember Jim Rohn said one time, he goes, if you live in America, he says, you have no right to complain. He said, if you live in Biafra or Tanzania or Kenya or some other place in the other world or Egypt, he said, you might have a right to complain about stuff. He said, but you don't have any right to complain here. You know, this is not a third world country. This is as good as this world gets. And I mean, I've traveled extensively and so have you. And I tell you what, I still live here in the U.S. of A. I mean, I would love to have a redoubt somewhere else, perhaps in New Zealand or something like that, which is where so many of the guys are doing right now. But as far as I'm concerned, if I'm not going to go to another country, this is it. I mean, other than New Zealand, this is the only place I would even consider living. Oh, by the way, remember we were talking about North Korea the other day and how they had these huge, huge precious metal reserves, including gold and rare earths? Well, they do something else that I found out today that I was completely unaware of, and it was from Tyler Durden over at Zero Hedge. And he says this, North Korea is a major opium producer, making it a prime target for the CIA. How about that, Austin? Isn't that something?
There you go.
He says, when the U.S. overthrew the Taliban in the wake of 9/11 as part of its newly launched war on terror, it set the stage for an explosive growth in Afghanistan's dying opium industry. Remember, we were bringing a lot of opium in and out of Afghanistan. The Taliban pretty much shut it down, and we had a massive shortage of opium, which cut into the CIA's black budget back in 2000. And now what happened in 2001, we already know. all the opium started flowing again out of Afghanistan. But despite being squashed by the Taliban, the opium market made a dramatic comeback immediately following the U.S. invasion in October of 2001. Remember, I already reported on this. So I told you guys. Now he's telling you the same thing I told you. Not only was the opium trade restored, it surged drastically, rising from a production level of 185 tons under the Taliban to 3,400 tons in 2002. I mean, this is crazy. It was a dramatic increase in opium production in post-invasion Afghanistan. It sparked speculation regarding the motives behind the aggressive action that the U.S. has taken recently towards North Korea, which is also a major opium producer. This is exactly what happened in the Cambodian Triangle. We want a completely control of the opium production and heroin production coming out of Southeast Asia. That's one of the primary reasons the CIA wanted to start the war with Vietnam, because we wanted to control the entire area. And once we got to the point where we were in control of it, we pulled our troops out. We also moved production back into Afghanistan because it was a major drought in the Cambodian Triangle in that area, probably because of our weather modification we did on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which caused a lot of the crops to fail. So then we moved it back to Afghanistan. Then in the 80s, the Russians had enough of it in Afghanistan. They tried to clean it out. And then we supplied the Mujahideen, the surface-to-air Stinger missiles to shoot the planes down of the Russians. And it bankrupted the USSR, trying to clean up Afghanistan. And now Afghanistan cleaned it up by itself with the Taliban. And now we went in and took control of it again with our CIA to reignite the drug war, which is causing massive amounts of heroin deaths all over the United States. What an unbelievable mess, Austin. I cannot believe our country's involved in this stuff.
I can't either, man. It's sad. And it was funny. I was looking at a chart the other day of opiate, primarily illicit opiate, meaning heroin or, you know, off-label opiate, stuff that's not pharmaceutical made. The death chart of the actual overdose deaths in the United States. And you can actually see right around 2003 to 2004, there was a slight increase, and it slowly ticked up. And by 2009, it was a full ramp all the way up to the top to where it is now, to where we're basically having the most amount of drug overdose deaths in the history of the United States, as I reported earlier on Monday. I think 53,000 drug deaths were reported now in 2015. 2016 numbers aren't even in yet. And this is, it's becoming an issue. And everybody wants to say, oh, well, it's because, you know, doctors did this with pharmaceuticals. Listen, doctors played a huge role in overprescribing opiates, prescribing OxyContin for no reason, giving these guys endless supplies of it. They did. They need to be held accountable for it. But what they've done now is they've used that excuse to withdraw a lot of the pharmaceutical opiates off the market and make it harder to get, to push those people that were severely addicted to opiates like OxyContin and push them into the black market and go into the heroin market. That's why heroin sales have exploded in the last decade. That's why heroin deaths have exploded in the last decade. And it's sad to watch all this happen. Now, this is another topic I read about it a couple weeks ago. I've heard about it before. It's a weird topic to talk about, but I feel like on our show, there's certain things that need to be addressed. And with what I see the younger generation getting exposed to, with the rhetoric that is just being spewed on them by the mainstream media on a regular basis, this is something that I wanted to touch base on. Everybody, you know, this isn't going to apply to everybody, but I want you guys to see exactly what they're talking about now. There is a new, not only just a fad, but a push by the mainstream media now from several different media outlets and blogs that are basically starting to say now that straight men are having sex with other straight men and it's not gay. They're referring to this as bro jobs, and it talks about how men that have sex with other men still consider themselves straight, not bisexual or gay, but completely straight. New York Times calls it bud sex, B-U-D. They say it generally refers to sex acts taking place between heterosexual men, and that straight men can perform homosexual contact in heterosexual ways. It's really bizarre. And guys, listen, if anybody's listened to this and you've ever done things you shouldn't have. I'm not condemning you. We've all sinned. We've all got grace, as long as you're not continuing to live in that. But this right here is what's warping this younger generation into total lawlessness. No morals, no ethics, no biblical basis on anything. Do what thou will. That's what Aleister Crowley used to say. This is what they're pushing out. This is an example from a article from the Huffington Post that they did, massive liberal piece, and it said, it's just a bro job, no homo. Does having sex with men make you gay? They said part of the reason for this debate is the narrow box idea that American society and culture places on men and how they have sex. Dr. Reynolds is a doctoral candidate at the University of Minnesota who researches online media and sexuality. He says, while guys who identify as straight may have sex with other men, and this does not make them gay. He said that he believes that children are socialized into their expected sexuality and genders. Here we go again, trying to push people into Christian normal beliefs. He's trying to say that's wrong. He said culturally acceptable forms of masculinity involve being straight, so men whose sexualities are not so clear-cut threaten the social order. And they go on to say, and there's a lot of weird stuff in these articles, I'm not going to go into all of it, but this is what the mainstream media is pushing incredibly heavily now. I saw it on social media today again, and I had to bring it up because what they're saying now, if you're a straight man and you have a girlfriend, or if you have a wife, if you have sex with your buddy and he's a guy, that's okay. It's just bro sex. You're just having fun with your buddy. There's nothing wrong about it. It doesn't even make you gay. You just need to do whatever you want with that, and that's just basically your friend that's a guy that you're engaging in this type of behavior with. Obviously, you guys understand how we feel about that. This can't be any further from the truth, but this is what is starting to push everything into the whole mindset of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember, they said every thought of every man was evil when he talked about that in Genesis. The same thing you guys know in the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's where this is headed. Now we have unbelievably liberal pieces like the New York Post, the Huffington Post, all these guys saying bro sex is okay. Even if you're married, you have a girlfriend. If you have sex with your guy friends, that's just normal behavior now. It's okay to do so. Don't feel bad about it. I can't even tell you how weird and strange ideology that is, Dad, but I just felt like I had to bring this up today because I've been hearing a lot about it.
Okay. Kay Griggs, you need to watch the video that she did. She has like a 2-hour video, 3-hour video online that she did 10 or 15 years ago. She's a former colonel's wife from the Air Force. And she said that in the higher ranks of the Air Force and the military, a lot of times they do this stuff with the younger cadets. They actually sodomize them. And they considered it to be okay. It's like a rite of passage because the Roman legions did this. And the Nazis, there were certain groups of those guys also that did this. And, of course, it's been around for a long time when you have men with men all of the time, like in a legion or a Roman army, etc. And that's one of the reasons that Rome fell. They stopped raising little Romans. And Austin's exactly right. This is homosexual sex. That's what this is. There was a pastor in Atlanta. I'm not going to mention his name because I know him, and may he rest in peace now. He's dead. He died, I believe, of AIDS. And he basically sodomized. He had a megachurch there in Atlanta, and he sodomized a bunch of the boys that were 16 years old and older, got to know them, mentored them, took them on trips with him, got them in a hotel room with him, and basically sodomized them. And there were a bunch of them. And they ended up filing a lawsuit against him for doing this, and he settled out of court. And then apparently he ended up coming down with, it looked like to me like it was AIDS, but I'm not going to mention any name. He's dead now. And the sad part about it is that, you know, he said the same thing, you know, to these kids, that this is okay, this doesn't make us homosexuals, this is okay to engage in this type of behavior. I'm going to say this to you if you're listening to me right now. No, it's not okay. The Bible completely forbids it. It says it is not okay for a man to lie with a man as a woman. That is basically an abomination to God, and that you're to be taken outside of the camp and stoned to death is what it says in the book of Leviticus and also in the book of Deuteronomy. That's the word of the Lord. That's what it says. Now, in the New Testament, we have grace, and we're not taking people out. We're not stoning them to death. But it also says the acts of the sinful nature, including homosexuality, are obvious, and that these people cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Guys cannot have sex with guys, period. That's just how it works. It's not. We're not designed to do that. that. Now, if you want to pervert yourself and do weird stuff, that's entirely up to you, but it's not okay. It's not of God. Now, the culture, as Austin said, is going further and further in this direction for the very reason of trying to pervert everybody so that every thought of every man will be evil all the time. What a crazy, crazy story, Austin. By the way, who will Trump pick to replace James Comey as FBI director? Several people are being listed out there. Chris Christie, which will never happen because of him prosecuting Jared Kushner's father. David Clark, which I doubt that's going to happen. And then they got Trey Gowdy in there, and that's the one I hope he picks. This is the South Carolina Republican that led the House Committee investigation of the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's actions surrounding the deaths of four Americans in Benghazi in Libya. Gowdy is also a former federal prosecutor who boasts of his work on drug trafficking, bank robberies, and child pornography cases. He was among lawmakers critical of Comey's decision not to prosecute Clinton in the email server investigation, saying other government officials would have been prosecuted if they'd handled classified information like Clinton did. But federal officials disagree with that assessment. Gowdy said after Comey's firing that though he had differences with a former FBI director on some matters, he never lost sight of the fact that he had a difficult job. Now, I'm going to say this very, very quickly. We need a pit bull in there who's going to do this. I have a dear friend of mine. She's listening right now. She's in the Philippines on missionary assignment as we speak. And I'm sure she's either listening to the show via podcast or she's listening to it live right now. And she was involved with the FBI, working with the federal government in prosecuting drug running, et cetera, all over the United States. And she finally realized, and she talked to her coworkers about this, that the government itself is involved in a lot of this narcotics trafficking. And when they finally start realizing this as employees of the federal government, they start to think, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this is actually happening. And we're actually involved in protecting the government that does this. This is a major, major mess, Austin. And the reality is this, that CIA black ops budgets, $1 trillion a year. You think about it. That's bigger than the automobile industry. Just think of that for a second. That's bigger. We don't sell $1 trillion worth of cars out of General Motors or Ford every year in the United States. The drug industry is bringing in $1 trillion worth of heroin money into the United States every single year. Is bigger than the automobile industry. That's crazy. So, and they said a lot of Wall Street banks worked so much on laundering this drug money that many of the major New York Wall Street banks would close their doors if they no longer had the drug money coming into them for deposits. So this is a mess, and I don't know what in the world we're going to do about it, but we need to get rid of the black ops. We need to get rid of the CIA. We need to go ahead and trim up the FBI. We need to get rid of the people in the FBI that aren't loyal, but we need to realize, guys, this is going to be a mess. Whoever gets in there in this position of the FBI is going to have a blind eye when they see the truth that my person who I worked with, who I know, who was an attorney, found about what was going on with the government. Austin, what do you think?
Yeah. No, it's definitely something that it kind of boggles your mind a little bit when you start realizing how deep this whole rabbit hole goes with what's going on with everything. That's why when you talked about earlier, and we've talked about this a bunch, with Gottlieb running the FDA, that spooks me more than anything, because that man is so pro-vaccine, it's nauseating, and the fact that he's going to be ahead of the FDA, you know, we got rid of Comey, whatever you want to call him. He's out of there now. Let's see who replaces him and if it'll be somebody that's actually going to stand their ground and have true constitutional Christian background and is willing to stand up for our rights for the FBI. Because, I mean, this guy, obviously, we've known it for a while, but now we absolutely 100% positive about it. He did nothing but whatever the globalist bidding was. And we can't continue to keep people like that in government, because the country's not going to get anywhere but down further. Also, too, in other news, this is pretty wild. As you guys know about facial recognition, I mean, it's all over the place now. Well, now what they want to start doing at airports, not only do they have facial recognition, obviously, at customs and passports and stuff like that, the new statements are showing that Customs and Border Protection want to make facial scans completely necessary, documenting when they re-enter the country and pass through TSA checkpoints, and want to grow it into an airport-wide system. Customs are called the biometric pathway, using facial recognition to identify all travelers arriving in the U.S., including passport-holding citizens, and expanding the program to TSA checkpoints and airport lounge access. It will be applied to all domestic travelers, regardless of citizenship status. As soon as you check in for arrivals or departure, we're going to stage your photo in that database. And then it goes on here to talk about how they're doing it, the programs that they're doing it. This right here, right now there's a lot of areas and airports all over the place. They have cameras everywhere, you know that. But facial recognition is expensive and running it through software is not cheap. So a lot of times you go into airports, they're not running facial scans when you walk in. They may do it at customs agents and stuff like that. They are saying now they are rolling out a full airport-wide facial recognition scanning all the time. Meaning as soon as you walk into the airport doors, more than likely as soon as you walk in or drive into the parking garage, they're going to automatically start scanning faces to see who is who. They're going to say, obviously, this is under the guise of national security. It's for protection. It's to prevent terrorism, even though we know the TSA has not stopped one single legitimate terrorist attack since they've been put into power after 2001. It doesn't matter. It's besides the point. They'll tell you it doesn't matter. They've stopped a lot of things that nobody knew knows about. It's bogus. It's all about invading our rights and using more and more artificial technology to sit there and completely engulf us in every aspect. The airports are already a nightmare. I don't fly. I do not fly commercial. I don't like security. I don't like TSA. I don't like being patted down. I don't like being told what to do, especially when I'm paying money and having to be told what to do. It doesn't make any sense to me. And now they want to start using facial recognition all over the place, wide. They're already doing this at Disney. We've talked about that before. Last time I tried to go to Disney for free, they pulled me to the side randomly, ran me through metal detectors, patted me down, no reason at all, just automatically patted me down. Then we figured out later on, as Dad and I were on the show actually, hey, maybe it makes sense that every time I've been to Disney, I always have some type of confrontation, and hey, maybe it's just not coincidental that they immediately picked me out at random as soon as I walked up to be metal detected and patted down, considering the fact that Disney has tens of thousands of facial recognition cameras just at the Magic Kingdom Resort, not even including Epcot and all the other ones. So yes, this whole facial recognition area is going right towards the area of Minority Report. That movie's incredible as far as what it shows us for the future. It's got some weird stuff in it, but it really goes into detail on the globalist and just idea of what their dream would be to have us live in, that everywhere you go, every place you touch, everything you look at is completely monitored, and they know exactly who you are, where you go every second of the day, and can control and dictate every aspect of that. That is their dream. That is their goal. That is the whole point of the UN and the 2030 agenda and the entire aspect of being able to control us from electronic technological standpoint, including our money, hence why they're trying to push everybody so hard to the cashless currency. But I thought that was interesting, Dad, that now they're starting to tell us that they're doing facial recognitions all over the airports, even though they've done this for a while. Now they're rolling it out, you know, platform wide, and it's all about our protection.
You know, I'll never forget when we had that crazy incident with that girl who hadn't taken her meds, that when he was chasing us around at the escalator at Disney. I mean, she was like Looney Tunes. And the cops got involved, security got involved, and I told them, I said, just look at the security cameras, the girl's lying. And they said, oh, we don't have any security cameras here. And I looked at the guy and I said, dude, why are you lying? I said, this is the bottom of an escalator. You have so many security, you probably have 25 cameras on that one escalator. I said, are you kidding me? I said, I will subpoena your court record. I will subpoena the camera records. And I said, you'll have to provide them in court. I said, this girl who's obviously having some kind of mental issue, some kind of mental break here, is nuts. And you guys need to realize that before you start hassling all of us who are here doing nothing. And speaking about the facial recognition cameras, Austin, this is interesting about this. An AI will decide which criminals in the UK get bail. This is from Motherboard. Get arrested in Durham, England, and artificial intelligence could help decide whether you're held in custody or you're sent home. But it's not yet clear if the algorithm is more accurate than police officers when it comes to assessing whether someone is likely to reoffend. Durham Constable says that the academics from the University of Cambridge have developed a harm assessment risk tool. It's an algorithm that an AI uses that analyzes crime data and predicts whether the arrest should be done and the person should be given bail. The tool is similar to those that recently rolled out in the United States, which is what you're talking about, the airports. Along that, yep. Durham is running a willful blindfulness exercise where officers are not shown the heart's prediction, but instead make their own guess as to whether the suspect will reoffend within 2 years and whether it will be serious, so the researchers can see if humans and machines make the same choice. I mean, this is crazy because the officers and this machine only agree 56% of the time. And now they're going to see if they're going to continue the research on it. They're hooking us into an AI. They're hooking us into an AI. So these thousands of cameras that are at the Magic Kingdom and Epcot and whatever, however, well, we have no idea how many ever and many cameras there are and how many cameras are going to be on the interstate. We already have facial recognition cameras all over Interstate 4 where we live. They're on big piles and poles, you know, every mile. They're going to have everything tied into a smart grid along with your car, along with everything. And this artificial intelligence that we talked about so many times is we're going to be hooked into through chemtrails and through Morgellons and through all of the stuff they're doing to our nervous system will pretty much tell everybody what our mood is, where we're doing, where we're going, and what we're up to. This is advanced fallen angel technology. Or if you don't like the fallen angel, you can call it advanced alien or extraterrestrial technology. Whatever you want to call it, that's what this stuff is. There's no way that we went from flying a box plane basically with bale wire, you know, 100 years ago to this type of technology in 100 years. This has all been done through retro engineering of these fallen angel extraterrestrial craft that we know exist and that are basically being used to do this technological advancement on our civilization at a very rapid pace. We have two different civilizations on this planet. We have the one that all of us live in, and then we have this breakaway civilization, which is privy to all of this advanced technology that we're getting. I mean, guys, you really think that these iPhones and these iPads and these smartphones, that all this stuff just popped up all of a sudden because somebody thought about it one day? No, 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 no. This is retro-engineered technology. What do you think, Austin?
No, you're absolutely right. I saw that same article today about the AI use in the UK. And, you know, there's nothing wrong, in my opinion, for using different algorithms and different spreadsheets and things to kind of figure out what a decision should be. We use them in business. We use them with numbers. That's cool. I got that. But this isn't about that. This is about taking these numbers. It's about taking this AI, and it's about hooking in the system, just like Dad said, and slowly pushing us forward into this complete and total AI-controlled prison, essentially, is what it is. So it'll reach a point where they don't even let you out. The AI makes the decision. The judge isn't even there to make the decision anymore. The AI makes the decision or can override him. These are all the next couple steps in the next few years, and that's where it's going. That's just part of it, guys. That's why I'm so cautious, and I talked to you guys so much about artificial intelligence with the autonomous vehicles, all this stuff, and I say this isn't something that's necessarily 100% bad all the time, but we're putting way too much reliance and we're allowing it to take way too much control of our lives, and in turn we're letting other people control these things and put them over us and use them over us, like in this case with the AI allowing people whether or not they should be released on bond. Not a good position for me, not a good position for anybody, in my opinion. Also turns out now that the FDA-approved medicine is not something, which of course you guys already know, is not something that's safe. A new study published in the Journal of American Medical Association examined all 222 drugs approved by the FDA between 2001 and 2010. The findings, years after approval, roughly a third of the medicines were labeled with warnings about serious adverse reactions, including life-threatening complications, including cancer, liver damage, so forth. Among the drugs with added warnings year after the drugs were approved, it goes on here, the Humira, Abilify, Paraxyl, Bextra, Repiva, Zelnorm, all these weird ones. The pharmaceutical trade group spokesperson said even with rigorous clinical studies and regulatory review, it may be impossible to detect certain safety signals until several years after approval once the medicine is in broader use. Of course, that makes us feel great. Make sure you know that really makes it feel good. The overall problems with the media won't report on. Each year, roughly 106,000 people die, Americans, 106,000 Americans die by FDA-approved medicines every single year. Yet, under the Trump administration, which I'm not just picking on him because Gottlieb is running it now, the FDA is urging that they need to speed up drug approval process because it'll save more lives and be able to help more people with serious illnesses, which, again, we know is a complete and total lie. All they're trying to do is the pharmaceuticals work, because that's what the pharmaceutical companies companies do. They give them money. They give kickbacks to the FDA. They do favors. They say, we need stuff approved. We need it done now. And it gets done. We've seen it time and time, over and over again. So just be sure that you know what you're getting into when you take these drugs, and that even if you decide to take them and there's not warnings on the box, there still can be very significant adverse side effects down the road that aren't even listed on the box. That's why I tell everybody all the time, I say it over and over again, and a lot of people listen to me, which is awesome. Take the natural approach first if you can. The pharmaceutical drugs are there. The doctors are there. The surgeries are there. The hospitals are there. They're always there. Try the natural approach first with your diet, with your lifestyle, with your water intake, with your supplements, all that stuff. Try and do that first, guys. Give it a shot. If it doesn't work, okay, you have that plan B backup plan to go do that. But don't go and make that your first thing you do is go get on half a dozen drugs, have an operation, be stuck in the hospital, and get involved in that hospital medical cycle where you're in and out on constant medications. I see it every single day, day in and day out, and it's not something that's good for anybody at all, and I really like to avoid it before it happens. So give the natural approach a shot first. Obviously, you know the FDA does not have our best interest at hand, Ed.
Up to 50% of the drugs which are approved within 5 years have their warning labels changed or pulled off the market by the Food and Drug Administration because of adverse side effects. Just today, I went to the little gym up here to work out, and I'm walking into this cast because, you know, I broke my foot 5 weeks ago. I'm about out of this thing now, praise God. And I'm 61 years old. And all of a sudden, I see this older woman. I mean, she's old. And she's coming down the stairs. She's got her special shoes on, and she's got a cane on, and she's basically crawled. She's in slow-mo. I mean, I felt so bad for her. I looked at her. I said, well, I got my cast on, and you got your cane. I said, we're a pair, aren't we? And she looked at me. She goes, well, yeah. She goes, I fell and broke my foot here a while back. And when I did that, I went to a doctor, and they never x-rayed it for 3 weeks. And then I got, then I had to do surgery on it. And now I've got, the neuropathy in my feet. And I can barely walk, and I'm in excruciating pain all of the time. And I looked at her, and I said, well, are you doing anything natural for what's going on? She said, there's some really good supplements for that nerve pain. She goes, well, I don't even know what you're talking about. I've never heard of such stuff. And I said, well, there's some natural things. Let me write a few things down for you. And then I started talking to her. She's on 10 prescription drugs. 10. She goes, I'm not on too many. I'm only on 10. That's what she said. And I said, well, do you realize that a lot of these drugs are being given to you because of the side effects of the other drugs? And some of the side effects may be neuropathy. And she goes, well, yeah, he told me that. And it's just one of those things. I'm kind of don't know what to do. And then he said, my podiatrist, when I walked into his office, told me that we were going to be good friends. And I looked at him and I said, I can't even believe you say something like that to me because I'm in such agonizing pain. See, guys, you have to understand something. There are a lot of doctors out there that see you as their next mortgage payment. They see you as the swimming pool payment. They see you as the alimony for their five ex-wives payment. Now, a lot of them aren't like that. You probably got about 20% of them are really, really, really good. I went to college with these guys, and I'm telling you, the vast majority of the ones that I went to school with, it was about the greed. It was about making the money. It was about not helping people. And I can say this honestly to you. I've had so many people come into the offices over the years back when we had our clinic, and they'd have a problem, and we had a certain fee in the office, and I would say to them, look, I said, I'm not going to charge you. This is something outside of my realm of expertise. I can't give you any legitimate information on this that's going to be beneficial to you, so I'm going to go ahead and just not charge you. I'll tell you what I can do for you, try to look up some research for you, but there's nothing I can do. And they say, well, you're the only person that didn't charge you. So I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. If I can't legitimately help you, I don't want to be that guy. See, that's the thing that I always have tried to do, and I've always tried to instill with you, Austin, and all of your brothers and sisters, is that we're here to help other people. Zig Ziglar said it so succinctly one time. He said, if you're willing to help enough other people get what they want out of life, you'll get what you want out of life. And that's so true. That goes back to the law of sowing and reaping and the law of reciprocity, which, in other words, if you help somebody else, they can help you back. If you're good to somebody else, they'll be good to you back. And I learned something. There are only really four or five really horrible, mean, nasty people who live in the world, according to Jim Rohn. But he said the problem is they move around a lot. You keep running back into them. And quite frankly, when you find people that are like that, that are really mean and horrible and nasty, step away. just step away and just tell them, hey, you know what? You know, we don't want to really be involved with all this. But we appreciate, you know, your time or whatever, but we got to go. And that's what I've learned a long time ago, Austin. If you're willing to walk away from these people that are these nutbags, it makes your life a whole lot better. So I'm going to say this again, and I've said it on the shows before. A lot of folks listening today, you've got some problems with your family. You've got some problems with your friends. You've got some problems with acquaintances that you probably don't need to talk to or hang out with anymore. That doesn't mean you can't love them. That doesn't mean you can't pray for them. That doesn't mean you can't be nice to them. But that might mean that you don't need to hang out with them. Because, you know, if you're trying to get up a ladder and you're climbing it and you're, you know, and you're basically doing okay on the ladder, but then one of your friends wants you to pick them up and carry them up the ladder with you, you know, if they're a small friend or you're in really good shape, you might be able to do that for a bit. But if two or three people are hanging on that ladder with you, trying to get, have you climb up with all of them, it makes it for a very difficult, dangerous climb, and chances are everybody gets pulled back off the ladder. That's how I've learned about folks. I play checkers with people. I say to people, are you interested in this? Yes. If they have a comment to come back with me on, like the lady today at the gym, I answer another question and I start talking to them. But if they're saying, no, and they're all mean and crusty like that, I'm like, have a great day, buddy. I got to go. And I leave. Because there's absolutely no reason to do that, to try to get involved with people that are unwilling to help themselves. And that's very, very important that you understand that, because there are a lot of people out there. I'm going to say this. Oh, I don't like doing this, but I'm going to say it. There are a lot of people out there, like that lady on the front, on the plane yesterday that I talked about, who told me she was a Teddy Kennedy bleeding heart liberal, that I told her what she could do to help get rid of rheumatoid arthritis, but she refused to do it because she wanted to be sick. There are people out there that when you ask them a question, you get a 20, 30 minute organ recital on how bad their life is and how many medications they're taking and all the problems and ailments they have. And that becomes their comfort zone. They get used to being like that. And if you tell them a way to get rid of all of that stuff, it suddenly becomes something that's not comfortable to them anymore. They don't want to eat clean. They don't want to drink the water. They don't want to exercise. They don't want to go to the gym. And suddenly you realize very quickly that you have just talked to somebody who absolutely doesn't care about anything you said, and they don't have any intention whatsoever to listen to you. So when you run into people like that, it's always easier just to step away and go, you know what, guys? Have fun with all this. And, you know, I've got to go. I know over the years I've worked with contractors, you know, doing certain projects at the office or whatever, the house. And I'm always there to ask them questions. And I always think, well, this is how I want to do it, but what do you think? What do you think the best way to do this is? Because you do this all the time. I don't. And a lot of times they'll come up with a different idea that's much better than what I thought of. That happened yesterday, by the way. I was talking to a contractor about an issue I had with a fireplace. And they said, here's how you fix that. I'm like, you know, I never thought about that. That's who we have to be. We have to be coachable. We have to be teachable. We have to be willing to learn what needs to be learned when we need to learn it and not kick against the goad. We don't want to do what the Jews did in the Old Testament. And Jesus said, you know, you guys are so stiff-necked that you kick against the goad. All you want to do is fight. Everything that you know to do is right. You want to make a big deal about it. Guys, we don't want to be those people. We need to realize that we need to bring honor and glory to God in all that we do and all that we think and all that we say. And we need to be doing it on a regular basis because, guys, this is the real world that we live in as far as what we know is to be reality. This is not a practice session. I'm 61 years old. It went by so fast, and I had so much fun, and I've been able to help so many people, and it's been such a blessing for me just to be around here and to be such a person that people come to and that I can help with certain conditions and problems that they haven't been able to be helped with before. It means so much to me that you guys are listening to the show today. It means so much to me that you respect us enough to tune in every single day or as often as you can. And I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for being our friends. I want to thank you for supporting Health Masters. I want to thank you for getting your multiple vitamins from us because that means so much to us because it helps to keep this radio show going and on the air. I mean, I'm putting my effort into it. I mean, I'm here on vacation up in Hiawassee in an RV, sitting in my pickup truck on a Skype next to a tower that has decent Wi-Fi so I can get a decent signal because I want to be here with you guys every day. That's my commitment to you guys because I love you guys and I appreciate you so much. You've heard me do the shows out of Europe so many times. It's because I want to be here for you guys. That's my mindset. So, guys, thank you. I love you and I appreciate you. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Austin, I'm going to write the summary. I'll let you go ahead and close.
Got it. Thank you, bud. And I just got an email in from a lady named Teresa. She said, could you speak on the air onto what essential oils and herbal supplements can be used as antibiotic replacements? Yes, I can. Essential oils can be helpful. I don't have any brands that I know of. I do know that oil of oregano is a very good one. Essential oil oregano. I've used that before repeatedly. That's a very good one. As far as herbal supplements, pretty much the best things I've found in order, if I get a cold or something significant and I don't want to go on antibiotics, because I rarely ever go on antibiotics, it's usually a stack of the Astragalus Supreme that we sell, the Virographis. The Virographis, the D and the C, those are the main ones, and the colloidal silver. So those are the main ones, right? That's just the top of my head. I didn't even pull it up for you. I just opened up the email when Dad was closing. So forgive me for not being prepared for this question, but I figured I'd answer it real quick while I'm on the air. So yes, the Astragalus, the Virographis, the D and the C, those are the main ones that I have found. Our buffered vitamin C, you can run high amounts of that. Those right there I've seen numerous times in my personal life, and multiple other people here locally and in the office be able to use that stack and not have to go on antibiotics and keep the immune system very strong, fight off anything that has gotten in the system. Very simple stack. If you want to go more aggressive, you can also throw in our immune support DF that we have. That's a good formula. I don't know if that would replace antibiotics, though. Like I said, the Astragalus, the Virographis, the vitamin D, and the vitamin C are probably some of the most important ones. And also, too, the black seed oil, especially if you have any issues with bacteria. The black seed oil is incredibly good for bacteria, so you could also throw that one in as well. I forgot about that one from the beginning. And if you guys saw the CoQ10 ubiquinol form is the one that the product that won product of the week yesterday. I didn't get a chance to talk about it. We were running a little late. So that one went on sale for 10% off, I think. That's an expensive formula. That's ubiquinol formula. Very, very effective, strong CoQ10 formula. We sell a lot of it. I take the product on a regular basis still to keep my heart healthy after the pericarditis last year. CoQ10 and turmeric have been the two most effective nutrients I have found for anti-inflammatory properties and also to strengthen the heart. Anti-inflammatory in the heart and also strengthening the heart, both of them, and for overall health. And remember, guys, the CoQ10 is very good for cholesterol. It can help out with blood pressure. It's also very good for basically the lymphatic system and overall blood and body's energy metabolism. As you get older, you produce less of it. Very essential for the heart. So it's a great product if you want to try it out now. And then, of course, we have the other products lined up that you can vote on that make them product of the week. So we appreciate everything, guys. Thank you so much for the emails we get every day. We're continuing to answer all of them. Again, I'm a little backed up on some of them. Sometimes some of them come through faster than others, and I see one like this one just came through when I opened up my email. But you know, Dad's not really answering any emails right now because he's out of town, so I'm doing most of it, and I'm deferring any of them to him that I need to help him with, and we go back and forth. So we appreciate that, guys. We thank you for the support. Email us if you guys need anything, healthmasters.com, or call us here, 1-800-726-1834. Hope you guys enjoyed the show today. You have an awesome, blessed, safe night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.